You're with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, free thinkers. This is Michael Parker. This is Deprogrammed. This is our final segment, final hour of today. I'll be joined in just a moment by another TNT host, Joseph Olson, in just a second. We're going to talk about a lot of current events and things that he's written about in the past and get his current take on things. Before we go to that, I've got to check in on the whole Uvalde thing. Joseph lives in Texas. I'm from Texas, and this is a Texas story about this continued tragic situation that happened in Uvalde. So I don't know if people know, but this guy, the Arredondo character, was also elected to the city council of Uvalde right before the shooting happened. And Pete Arredondo asked for a leave of absence. So, I mean, as ridiculous as this sounds, a week after the shooting, he is going to get sworn in to the Uvalde City Council, and he almost, I think, immediately asks for a leave of absence. Well, I guess a day or two ago, the council, because they've received so much pushback and testimony from outraged residents and families, they said, you know, don't grant this guy a leave of absence. In fact, he shouldn't even be on the city council, and yet he is. And more and more information is coming out about how everything went wrong on the response to the Uvalde tragedy. And if I were a member of the city council, because remember, he was elected to this before the school shooting happened, I would allow him to not show up a few times, because the way this city council works is if he fails to attend three consecutive city council meetings, they can remove him from the council. I would guess that that's exactly what's going to happen. If he does not, you know, if he's not getting the leave of absence that he wants, so that he can remain in hiding, that I would guess he may voluntarily step down by just not showing up. We'll have to see what happens, but that's what I think. And so the Robb Elementary School massacre just continues to be very, very strange. And you know, is it incompetence? Was there malevolence involved? The way this whole thing happened? We're going to continue to follow this, but at least the local townspeople are not going to allow this guy to not or take a leave of absence from the city council, because he shouldn't be allowed to. I mean, if you're elected to that, you know, that's your job to do, and you can't suddenly just not show up for work because you let a tragedy befall your community on your watch in another area. So this is really interesting. We'll see what happens, and we'll continue to follow it. You're listening to TNT Radio. I'll be back in just a moment with Joseph Olson.
Digging deeper on the facts.
It's a source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. So for my final hour, I'm going to be joined by Joseph Olson. He is one of the fellow TNT co-hosts here. He co-hosts a show called Sky Dragon Slaying. He also has written over 60 articles for Canada Free Press. He is the co-author of a book called Slaying the Sky Dragon, Death of the Greenhouse Gas. And the show here on TNT is Slaying the Sky Dragon, the show. And so I wanted to talk to him about quite a few things. We're both from Texas, and greetings, Joseph. How you doing?
Oh, Michael, delighted to talk to you. Delighted again to talk to the TNT audience in a different program hour. Last week I had an interview hour long with Jeremy Nell, who operates the Germ Warfare website. And we talked a little bit about my personal background, how I was actually red-pilled. That interview is up at Principia Scientific, which I'm a co-founder of, along with John O'Sullivan, who's the other co-host on the Sky Dragon Slaying site. And we wrote that book together, Slaying the Sky Dragon, back in 2010. We had eight authors from five different countries. Two of the authors had met at a conference in Stockholm prior to the publishing of the book, and two of the authors met the weekend before publishing the book to do the final edit on it. But the rest of us were, like I said, five different countries. We'd never met, and most of us had never even talked on the phone. So this was a complete internet phenomenon that we were able to produce that book at all. And it's still state-of-the-art science. When it was issued in November Thanksgiving Day of 2010, which was almost a year after the break of the climate gate, where they've had absolute proof that the East Anglia University was manipulating all of the data and manipulating all of the research papers, and that everything about, quote, carbon climate forcing was a fraud. One of our co-authors was a professor of applied mathematics at the University of Stockholm, Klaus Johnson. And his chapter had some things that were part of the thermodynamics course training for engineers. It's after you have 4 semesters of chemistry, 4 semesters of physics, and 3 semesters of calculus, you're required to take a course called numerical methods that teaches you the calculus you need in order to solve thermodynamics equations. And then engineers are required to have 2 semesters of thermodynamics. Well, he got an order from the Stockholm University, the ones who award the Nobel Prizes in science and medicine, that he was not allowed to teach that particular math formula in his class any longer. So that gives you an idea of the extent of the deception that's gone on and the high level of forces that we've been working against as a team for the last 12 years. So
it has been pervasive and been very powerful. I have many, many friends that are active participants in the green agenda and raising the flag of fear that we're approaching, you know, a climate crisis. And I'll be honest, I didn't know as much. I mean, I was always skeptical. I didn't know as much as I know now, just as a product of working for TNT. And I've had the chance to speak to a lot of different guests about this subject. And one of them in particular, one of the people that really blew my mind, was a guy named James Comas. And we were talking about just the geodynamics and the dynamic system of the planet. And I already knew that there were volcanoes in Antarctica, and clearly geothermal activity warms water and things, but I didn't know it to the extent that he explained it to me. And of course, an hour is not enough to give it the due that it deserves. But this is, I mean, the pushback that we're going to have to give to get people to understand all of this, it's going to take a lot, because there's a lot of people that just, they don't know any of this and they don't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, that's the whole problem. It's a lot easier to subscribe to the Chicken Little theory that the planet's about to fall apart. Yeah. And subscribe to the Jack and the Beanstalk miracle green energy things than it is to actually study all of the science that's related to it. And that's the advantage I've had, is that I've been a registered engineer for almost 40 years, and I had really good fundamental traditional scientific method professors in the university that really instilled a love of empirical data driven hypothesis, theory, and law. And so that's where I come from. It's like, well, if you can't prove it from theoretical physics that is accepted and provable repeatedly, then you have nothing but a false hypothesis. And that's what we have with the global warming thing. No gas molecule can capture, store, redirect, or amplify radiant energy photons moving at the speed of light. Any absorption that happens only happens in narrow spectrum ranges, lasts for a billionth of a second, imparts a little bit of energy to the gas molecule, which kicks an electron into an outer shell, which increases the kinetic energy, the activity of the individual molecule. But because of the conservation of energy, it's not creating energy, it's removing energy. And so what happens is, a billionth of a second after the, quote, absorption, you have an emission of a longer wavelength, lower energy photon. And this is called the Stokes shift. I've done a dozen interviews with Dr. James Fetzer on BitChute, where their video presentations are about an hour long. And those, you're able to explain science where audibly it's difficult to understand, but when you see the graphs and you see the models and everything that it takes to actually explain physical reality, then it becomes very understandable. So that's where we start off. But this is a trifecta of fraud. And one of the other frauds is that you have sustainable green energy. You know, we have to get off of dirty fossil fuels. Well, none of the sustainable energies are net energy producers. All of them are net energy losers. It takes more hydrocarbon energy to create solar cells, windmills, and biofuels than you get out of any of those fuels. So they are bottom line net energy losers. And if you have a net energy loser, if it takes 10 solar cells to do all the mining, refining, processing, and distributing to create one solar cell, then you're not going to solve the world's energy problem, you know, putting up 100 photocells and producing 10 photocells. That's absolutely a net loser. And the same thing with biofuels. It takes 100,000 BTUs of energy input to manufacture a gallon of methanol, ethanol that has 80,000 BTUs that you add to 110,000 BTU gasoline to reduce your mileage by 20%. So, you know, if you're taking 22 pounds of corn to produce 1 gallon of ethanol, not only are you removing that from the food stream for the whole planet, which is used almost exclusively for livestock feed, but also for human feed. So you're burning food in your fuel tank and telling yourself that you're saving the planet. And there's absolutely no benefit from an energy or an emissions standpoint on either of those systems for that, or the soybeans that they convert to biodiesel, which takes 50% more energy to produce biodiesel than it does to just use diesel. So why are we doing all these gymnastics to come up with things that we know don't work? And then the third part of this is the hypothesis that we're about to run out of oil. And this is something that the U.S. Geologic Survey has been perpetrating since Rockefeller monopolized the oil industry in the late 1850s in Pennsylvania. And he's been trying to convince everybody that, oh, we're about to run out of oil. It's just a fossil fuel. And, you know, there's only so many dead dinosaurs. And we're going to have this constantly decreasing resource when, in fact, it's being produced on a eternal basis. We've had billions of years of petroleum production on this planet, and we've got another billion years supply at least.
Joseph, well, that's what I would like. That's one of the things I really want to ask you about. In full disclosure, I've said, the audience knows this, but I grew up in the oil business, and you know, like most teenagers, I could wait to get the hell away from it and move off the farm that I was living on. But now, later in life, I'm kind of fascinated with the subject because it is at the crux of many of the things that we're confounded with right now, and some of that is artificial scarcity. And one of the things I always wondered as a kid and as an adult is like, well, where did oil actually come from? Because it doesn't really make sense to me that all of this oil was decayed biological matter. Okay. All right. Let's say it's not the dinosaurs. Let's say it is decaying forests and things like that. Was there enough forest to create this? So I've always thought that idea was probably not likely. And then at some point, when I was doing a show in the early 2000s, I came across this idea of abiotic oil. But at the end of the day, I still don't know where oil comes from, but I think that you have an idea, and I would like for you, I yield the floor to you to kind of explain this.
Okay. Yeah. As you mentioned, I have 60 articles at Canada Free Press. My first one there was One Pleasant Day in Runnymede back in October of 2009, prior to the ClimateGate scandal. And then I continued to write for them up all the way through 2010. And one of the articles I wrote was Fossil Fuel is Nuclear Waste. And this article was at Canada Free Press. Let's see. Scroll down.
In 2010, I have it right here, September 26, 2010.
Right. And here's one of the little passages that I want to read from it because it's pretty interesting. This is a great article. The meaning of Pismo and La Brea. California is blessed with interesting place names from its multicultural heritage. Pismo Beach is named after the Chumua, C-H-U-M-A-H, Indian word for globs of tar due to the natural hydrocarbon outflow found on the beach. the Spanish Portello expedition, which entered the Los Angeles Valley in 1769, discovered molten geysers of tar at the present day La Brea tar pits in downtown Los Angeles. And the tar ran down what's today Wilshire Boulevard and gummed up the beaches. You know, now they started doing drilling. California's first oil well was at the Motejo River in Humboldt County in June of 1865. And that oil was shipped to a San Francisco refiner where they made kerosene, the same product that Rockefeller was manufacturing out of his Pennsylvania field, which is what saved the whales. So, you know, if you want to really be environmentally conscious, let's save the whales by not using whale oil, and we'll use kerosene instead. And then the next one was in Pico Canyon, which is near Sierra Clarita. That was in 1876. And then the larger fields were developed by a guy named Ed Doheny, D-O-H-E-N-Y, in 1892. He was heavily involved with Rockefeller in the Teapot Dome scandal. And then also when the president of Mexico refused to sell Mexican oil at 10 cents on the dollar, they assassinated the president of Mexico. So this has been a very nefarious bunch of people for a long period of time. I can't justify the actions of the oil industry, but if you look out in the universe, hydrocarbons are absolutely everywhere. You've got right. The giant horsehead nebula that is nothing but methane. The original atmosphere on Earth was made of methane and ammonia. The first living organism on Earth happened a billion years after the start of the planet. So how did we have methane in the atmosphere if methane comes from cow farts and there weren't any cows for like another 4 billion years? The whole thing is absolutely absurd. Saturn has a moon called... Yes, go ahead.
I just want to interject. You made a very good point. And I also, I don't want to sound like I'm a cheerleader for the oil industry. It's just, I just want some realism introduced back into this subject. And even if we could take our cars off of fossil fuels, we would still need oil because there's 6,000 some odd products that are made from petroleum products. And so that's, I just wanted to make that clarification. So.
Oh, you can't imagine the amplification factor that hydrocarbons have done for humanity. If you had to go out and mow your yard every week with a pair of scissors, just imagine how labor intensive that would be. And what hydrocarbons are is a force multiplier. So when Henry Ford invented the Ford tractor and the Ford Model T, farmers did not have to spend one third of their cropland having forage for their draft animals. So if you had to have oxen and teams of horses to pull your farm equipment and then to pull your goods to market, and you didn't have to spend one third of your cropland producing the food for them, and you didn't have to deal with the manure from them, you were entirely liberated. And what happened was that Ford tractors and cars were real low compression. They could operate on ethanol. Farmers could grow and a fraction of the amount of forage land necessary for horses and draft animals, they could grow enough ethanol that they could run their tractors and their Model Ts. And so right after World War I, Rockefeller said, well, we need to fund prohibition so that nobody can produce ethanol, so nobody will be able to operate their tractors and cars without petroleum. And they were the principal funders of the prohibition movement.
I have never made that connection.
Well, that's the whole thing. And what they wanted to do was that they actually believed the fossil fuel thing, because wells do start running dry, and particularly the shallower wells run dry quicker. And so what they were thinking is that possibly the planet was producing oil, but it wasn't producing it as fast as we were consuming it. And so you had something that was going to be a decreasing resource. And if they could switch the U.S. currency from gold, which has pretty much a fixed refinement rate and makes a perfect standard for a stable monetary system, if they could switch from that to something that was decreasing in quantity, then they would have a natural inflation-based currency that was based on petroleum. And that's what they tried to do with the original oil booms and cutoffs that we had in the 70s, the original energy reductions. So, and the way that I understand this process, and I've studied it extensively, is that Earth has 700,000 cubic miles of uranium and 1.2 million cubic miles of thorium. And the thorium is a byproduct of the uranium, which has a 4 billion year half-life. The stablest forms of uranium have that. And so bottom line is the thorium we have on the planet is left over from the uranium that we had on the planet, because it's one of the daughter elements that's produced by the decay, fission decay of uranium. But what happens is, just think about it like the simplest analogy I could come up with is like a rack of pool balls. You've got a triangle, it's got 15 pool balls on it, which, you know, like eight of them, seven of them are evens and eight of them are odd. And so you've got a similar thing in a large molecule, I mean, a large atom. And so a uranium atom has 92 protons, but it has more than 92 neutrons. So here you've got this triangular rack of neutrons and protons, and then the cue ball, you hit it with the cue ball, you might knock one odd off, and that would be a neutron, and that would give you an isotope of uranium. Or you might knock a proton and a neutron, which would be an even oddball off of that triangle, and that would give you a lower element. That would give you the thorium that we're talking about. And then you could also have the cue balls slide over and just barely touch the rack of balls, at which point you would have an isotope that was adding an additional neutron to it. So that's the simplest way to look at it. But if you had it where we could see it in 3D visual, it'd be even easier to understand. But bottom line is, if you have 92 neutrons and protons, theoretically, you could break that into 92 hydrogen atoms. You could break it into 46 helium atoms. You could break it into 16 carbon atoms. And you could break it into 12 oxygen atoms, just based on dividing the 92 by the atomic number of those other elements. And if you've got a system where you're producing hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon under high heat and pressure, you are going to manufacture hydrocarbons. And then as those hydrocarbons, the simplest would be methane, which is CH4, one carbon and four hydrogens. And as that bubbles up under high heat and pressure, it will form longer chains, which will give you your higher weight gases like propane and
Joseph. Go I tell you what, let's. I got so entranced by listening to you. I kind of blew through my break. Let me just take a quick break here. I'm speaking with Joseph Olson. He's a civil engineer. He's a co-founder and senior fellow at Principia Scientific International, co-author of Slaying the Sky Dragon. And this is fascinating. We got to take a quick break. This is TNT Radio. We'll be right back.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
I think people should come to Freedom Fest for the friendship, getting to know folks, getting to talk with people that have similar views, but also can kind of challenge you a little bit.
One of the best things about Freedom Fest is coming here and learning that you are not alone in your fight for freedom.
There's people from all walks of life, from all across the United States and even the world come here.
Don't miss Freedom Fest,
the largest liberty event of the year.
July 13th to 16th at the Mirage in Las Vegas. For more information, go to freedomfest.com.
Today's News Talk Radio. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
We are back. This is the program. I'm speaking with Joseph Olson. He's one of my fellow hosts here on TNT Radio. And we're talking about a particular article that he wrote for Canada Free Press back in September of 2010. And if I'm understanding this correctly, I think what you're saying here is that the uranium and the thorium can break down into forming something called hydrocarbons, which would be oil, gases, methane, etc. Continue.
Yes, well, it also forms the period 8 elements, which are on the far right-hand side of the periodic table. And those elements have in their outside shell a completed electron pattern. So those are what used to be called inert gases. Mm-hmm. And that would be helium and neon and krypton. And those cannot come from anything other than nuclear decay. They can only come from fission decay because they don't form compounds. So you can't find, you know, and a perfect example of that is radon. And radon has a half-life of, going from memory here, but I think it's about little less than three days half-life. And so if you have a pound of radon, at the end of 28 days, you've got like an eighth of an ounce of radon. And the only way you have radon coming into your basement of your house that they tell you you need to check once in a while is because it's bubbling up through the rocks of the planet, but it can't be more than a week or two old. So you've got fission decay going on right underneath your feet. And fission, if you take a nuclear atom and you break it apart, a uranium atom, you get a million times the amount of energy, heat energy, that you get from TNT, which is why they measure nuclear bombs in megatons, because mega is six zeros, a million times the amount of TNT. So if it has a pound of uranium, it'd be, you know, a million pounds of TNT. And you divide that out and come up with your tonnage. And so that's an enormous amount of heat, number one, that is coming up through our feet and through the core of the planet. And it's completely neglected by the climate alarmists because they say, well, we can measure what's coming through the ground. Well, the ground's a perfect insulator, but also the planet is only, the crust is only 40 miles thick in the thickest point of the planet. And so what happens is you've got a rift line that goes all the way around the Pacific Ocean, goes up through the center of the Atlantic Ocean, and then circles around through the bottom of the Indian Ocean, and that forms a continuous chain of 100,000 miles of volcanic rift zone where high heat and high pressure gases and other fluids bubble out from underneath this, quote, lid that we've got sitting on top of it. And the lid's just popping up and down. It's so unstable that the plastic molten rock that's underneath us cannot support it, and the moon actually lifts the crust of the Earth 18 inches at the equator every day, just as it lifts the water on the Earth 36 inches. So if you can look up Earth and then underline tide at Wiki, you will be surprised. This is something we didn't know until we got the third generation of GPS satellites where we could actually measure the amount of vertical deflection on the planet on a daily basis. But that's a pumping action that happens. And that's what causes the forces for the subduction zones and causes the earthquakes. That and the fact that the fission underneath our feet is not constant because earthquakes and volcanoes are not constant. And one of the things that triggers a nuclear reaction is a bunch of spare, you know, neutrinos or neutrons or gamma rays or whatever your high-speed particles are that cause those uranium atoms to break apart. And so
is that coming from the sun?
It comes from the sun, comes from the Milky Way, comes from other galaxies, and then it comes from the particles itself. As you break a uranium atom apart, it releases neutrons and gamma and beta and alpha particles, and those trigger reactions, which is how you can have a chain reaction in a nuclear power plant. You have a controlled chain reaction where you only let a certain amount of uranium atoms be lit off. But if you want to have a nuclear bomb, then you want that to happen as quickly as possible. And so this is all very proven technology. Matter is neither created nor destroyed. So we don't create and destroy neutrons and protons. What we do is we take big groups of neutrons and protons and break them down into smaller groups. But that means that you have these daughter reactions. If you look up uranium under Wikipedia, it'll say that there's 13 first stage daughter elements. But then if you look a little bit further, some of those like potassium 40 break into another additional stream of elements. And so that's the whole thing, is that you got these atoms that are being broken from large atoms into smaller and smaller atoms. And that's irrefutable. I mean, it just, the evidence is so overwhelming. And so that's what's causing. And one of the additional gases that's in the inert gas is argon. And argon is like 1% of the atmosphere. It's an inert gas. And so bottom line is, you know, if you study chemistry and physics, I find it fascinating. I find the history of it to be fascinating. There's a lady that I have mentioned several times in my series with James Fetzer called Kathy Loves History and Physics. And she does a great job of explaining this stuff. And one of my favorite phrases is that education is not a bucket you fill, it is a fire that you light. And so I got my fire lit a long time ago, and I'm trying to light as many fires as possible. I'm trying to inspire the STEM students of today to understand real science and reject this forced science on fossil fuels, green energy, and peak oil.
Amen. And so let me just make sure that I'm understanding the bottom line to this in as it refers to oil. The planet, being a dynamic system, is making oil. And I don't know, we once thought we had a finite amount, but this is a natural process of the planet. One of the things that you point out in the article as well, for our paranormal aficionados, and I've heard this before and it makes absolute sense to me, all you have to do is go to the La Brea tar pits and you'll smell it. Or you go to a refinery, you go to the Permian Basin, Odessa, Texas, you could smell it. In Texas, we call that oil smell, money smell, but that's just a joke. But anyway, you mentioned the Bermuda Triangle. One of the theories about the Bermuda Triangle, and this makes sense to me, is that there are periodic releases of methane, CH4, into the ocean water, which then makes the ocean water less dense. And unfortunately, if you're in a ship where this happens, you just sink immediately. So this is the methane coming up from the ocean floor inside the Earth. And this came from somewhere. And the processes that you're describing explain that and the creation of hydrocarbons in general.
Yes, well, they found out that it makes better sense to have a torpedo go off underneath a boat and lift the boat with just the bubble from the explosion than to try to bust through all of the side armor on great big warships. And so they would set off a torpedo underneath the boat. It would lift the boat up, and that would break the keel of the boat. Both halves would break and fall underneath the water. The other thing that happens with a high volume methane release like that is that it has a stoichiometric relationship, and it's not explosive throughout its concentration range, but there are certain concentration ranges where it's highly explosive, where if the methane broke through the surface of the ocean, it has a specific gravity of 0.43, which means it's lighter than air, which has an assigned value of 1.0. You can fill a balloon with methane, it'll float just like you were filling it up with helium or hydrogen, because both of them are lighter than air. And I believe hydrogen is like 0.1 and helium is like 0.3 specific gravity. But bottom line is, you can look those numbers up. I don't try to memorize every dang number in every conversion table in the world. But in the atmosphere, if you're flying along in an airplane that has producing sparks and you happen to run into a cloud of methane that's just been released from the ocean, you could all of a sudden find yourself vaporized in an atmospheric explosion that you didn't see happening. So that's the other thing that could possibly be happening in the Bermuda Triangle as well.
you know, when you and I were emailing back and forth, we were talking about this false reality dystopia. And so we're talking about two crucial points of this right now. A is that we're entering a climate crisis or in a climate crisis. B is that we have a finite fuel source in the form of oil, hydrocarbons. So that those two things alone are fundamental lies that pretty much are big parts of most people's view of the world and allow the governments of the world and those who run things and economic markets to do what they do. It's essentially artificial scarcity and climate alarmism bundled together into this major lie nightmare.
Well, like Orwell said, ignorance is bliss, and these people are trying to keep you as blissful as possible. It's a lot easier to believe the Chicken Little sky is falling and the Jack and the Beanstalk is going to save us from energy problems and listen to the Pied Piper professors than it is to actually sit down a little bit, do a little bit of study. And then they completely restrict the ability of people to articulate these other points. You can't get a debate with any of these climate fanatics. You can't get a debate with anybody on the petroleum industry. I've been lucky that I've been a guest on Coast to Coast AM 5 times, and 3 times we talked about the global warming stuff. Once I was talking with their host, Richard Seard, which this is an article that was published at Principia Scientific on November 25th, 2020, Body Electric Secrets, absolutely stunning the effect that electromagnetic industry has on biological systems. But the last time I was on Coast to Coast was on March 18th, 2021, and I had written an article from Muscle Power to Carbon Empowerment, which is a supplement article to what we discussed in the fossil fuel article. And then also I had written another one at Principia Scientific. This one is October 26th, Stop Gore Bull Warbling, which goes into a little bit more detail about the stuff that we've been talking about.
Well, another thing that I wanted to ask you about, because I know that you have a vast amount of knowledge and you're interested in many of the subjects that I'm interested in. And when I pour across the web, you know, this particular show, I'm doing more news, but in prior shows, I did a lot of coast to coast type material. And the very first hosting job I ever had was to do a coast to coast type show because I have interests in these things. And I used to be very vocal about it. But one of the stories that caught my attention in the past week or so, is this situation, and I have not had enough time to look into it deeply, but was the mysterious die-off of these cattle in Kansas. And I believe there was 10,000 head of cattle that died suddenly. You can see the pictures of them. They're on their backs, feet in the air, dead as the day is long. And they're trying to say, you know, that it's climate change or whatever. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, we have Elon Musk, who's planning on putting up 42,000 Starlink satellites that are all going to be broadcasting 5G back down to the planet. And then we've got an enormous system of 5G network that's being installed currently. It only takes several micro volts of electricity to be able to, micro amps of electricity to be able to operate your cell phone. These cell phone towers have an average of a 200 amp, 208 volt, three phase electric service, which is 72,000 amps available. And that's just an enormous amount of power over what you would possibly be able to justify for cell phone usage. So it's possible that you had radio in intensity. I don't agree with everything that Dane Wigington at Geoengineering Watch has to say. He's yep. wrong on the climate. He's wrong on the ozone hole, and he's wrong on renewable energy because he used to be a solar cell salesman and he still supports that. But if you look at the fires that they had recently in California, it's pretty hard to argue that those fires are naturally occurring fires when the shrubs in front of your house don't burn, but the granite on your countertop melts, you know? So it's kind of like you pretty much, the government has announced that they've been working on directed energy weapons for a long time. And then we also have the known fact of HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, mm-hmm. which yep. is able to heat up the ionosphere. And you could You could cause a heat swell in one particular area where the cattle were, but you could also come in there and you know, crop dust them with anything you wanted in the way of biologics. So when you're at war with people that think they own the planet and that we are just pests on their planet and they are trying to exterminate us with chemtrails and biological weapons and fake medicines and non-nutritive foods, they've declared war on us. And just because we haven't noticed it as much as we should doesn't mean that they're not still doing it. And one of the elements, you know, you've got the four horses of the apocalypse, and I've modified one of those because according to the Bible, it's famine, disease, pestilence, and death. Well, death is universal. You're not going to avoid death, but war is almost entirely staged and planned by these people. So let's put that in as a threat factor that these people that consider themselves the four horsemen of the apocalypse control. So we've got disease. Yes, we got plenty of disease. We got pestilence. Well, that's GMO and pesticides and fake medicines. And then you've got famine. Well, what do you know? Let's just destroy all of the food processing industry and all of the food production industry. And then you've got war. Well, if all else fails, let's just keep rattling the cages with Putin and see if we can get him to either set off a nuke or we'll set one off. And since we got control of the Western news media, we'll tell everybody he's the one that started it. We just had to finish it. That's how insane these people are. And their psychological profile is that they grew up on Malthus, nihilism, and Darwin. And so that's what fundamentally is their psychological underpinnings that make them better than the rest of us, and that they're the ones that should be able to decide the whole fate of the planet and the fate of everyone on the planet. It's really disturbing, but if we can unite the people of the planet in knowledge and truth, we'll be able to wrestle control of the planet away from these people, and we can end up having the Eden on Earth that this Earth is certainly capable of producing.
Amen, brother. I speak with Joseph Olson. He is a civil engineer for over 30 years. He is a co-host of Slaying the Sky Dragon here on TNT. He also co-wrote the book of the same name, and he is a co-founder and senior fellow of Principia Scientific International. My name is Michael Parker. This is Deprogram. We're going to take a couple minutes. We'll be back for our final segment.
The Biden administration begs for more oil, at the same time saying, we need less oil. Confused? So is the CNN anchor.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
Biden's Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm demanded oil companies make massive investments to increase supply now, while simultaneously demanding they shut down oil within a decade. Here's the clip.
Are you telling me you want them drilling for more oil? You want the refineries putting out more gasoline in 5 or 10 years?
What we're saying is today we need that supply increased. Of course, in 5 or 10 years, actually in the immediate, we are also pressing on the accelerator, if you will, to move toward clean energies.
Yes, you heard that right. More oil now, less oil now. This passes for logic in the wacky world of the climate agenda. For the Marano Minute, this is Mark Marano on TNT Radio.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Mainstream media censors, smears, and intimidates those telling the truth. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is our final segment. You are listening to Deprogram. I am your host, Michael Parker. I'm speaking to another TNT host, Joseph Olson, who I believe is in the Houston area, I think, a fellow Texan, even though I don't live there anymore. And Joseph, one of the things I was thinking while listening to that Mark Marano thing, and he was just on your show, I believe, last week, is that I read about a week or so ago, I reported on the show that there is a refinery, and I believe it's in Houston, and it's one of the top 25 biggest refineries in the U.S., and they are planning on shutting that down within the next 2 years because supposedly the company that owns it does not want to pay for the maintenance of some of the equipment. I bring this up because, and I've said this on the show before, that I thought we needed more refining capacity, and I've had people who kind of agree with everything you and I are saying, oh, I don't know if we need more refineries, but it seems to me like even before this latest gigantic uptick in gas prices, that every now and then, you know, we'd have a fire at a refiner, we'd have an explosion, we'd have to shut down something for, you know, a couple of weeks, you know, gas prices go up. And now I see here we are in this crunch, Biden shuts down production. Now he's telling us to start production again. Yet I read this article just recently that this major refinery, one of the top 25 in the U.S., is going to probably shut down because they don't want to pay for the maintenance. I mean, it all looks, I think, to the critical thinker that, well, wait a minute, if we need these fuels, then surely you would do everything in your power to maintain the, no pun intended, but the pipeline to keep it coming. But they don't. In fact, they're talking about the reduction of some of our refining capacity, which goes back to our original thought, which is this is a controlled environment of artificial scarcity.
Yeah, well, we've got a real unfortunate problem right now is that monopolists have always worked to have complete control of absolutely everything on the planet. And now we've got three, quote, venture capital groups, which would be BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. And together, they are major investors in almost every corporation, but they're not investors in the sense that the principals of those three companies own the companies themselves. They're just hedge fund managers. So you have some people that have an enormous amount of financial power with very minimal amount of their own personal money invested. And they're able to go out and dictate policies to all these different companies. And if their policy is that the Lyondell plant, which has been operating since World War I here in Houston, is no longer economically feasible, well, the only reason they're doing that is because they think they can shut down the refinery operations here and open them up in some slave colony that they've got somewhere else in the world and import our products. And that way we eliminate all these jobs and all of that tax base. And we also eliminate the convenience and the security of having it as a firsthand resource. So and what has happened is that because of their enormous amount of leverage, the boards of directors for these companies cannot be voted out by their shareholders because the majority of the shareholders are institutional shareholders like pension funds and government agencies that are involved in that. And so bottom line is they've got carte blanche to dictate to the other industries in the United States everything that's going to happen. And these people do not have our best interests at heart at all. And so they have set about to destroy the United States every way possible. And this is just another threat vector to absolutely destroy the economy and to destroy the ability to have locally produced goods that you have more security over. And that's the whole thing. They want to have as much insecurity and instability as possible because they profit every time that there's an up and down in the market because they're the ones that manipulate the market. So they know exactly when to put in their put calls and their losses, you know. So, and then you were starting off the program with the your comments about the incident that happened out in Uvalde.
Yep.
James Fetzer has pretty much proven to my satisfaction that Sandy Hook didn't happen, and I've got a lot of questions about Parkland and the Harvest 91 thing that happened out in Las Vegas, and there certainly seems to be a lot of questions about Uvalde, but amazingly, we have 14 Rhino senators that said they're going to sign a red flag law based on what happened in Uvalde. So we can see that they have a benefit in these triggered events. And if they wanted to do false flags, that's a benefit to them. But amazingly enough, I had heard about red flag laws being declared unconstitutional. So I went and looked it up. And this is a Supreme Court ruling that was May 17th, 2021. It's Edward Caniglia, C-A-N-I-G-L-I-A, versus Stroms, S-T-R-O-M-S. This is a case that was, and it's posted at libertas.org. And I'll send it to you so you can discuss it further, because we need to get this into the dialogue. Supreme Court ruling delegitimizes red flag laws. This was a unanimous decision that it violates due process and the Second and Fourth Amendment. So here we have 14 Republican senators that are going to go against a unanimous Supreme Court decision from just 1 year ago. And one of those senators is Rotten John Cornyn from Texas. I've been in contact with many members of the Texas Republican Convention, and they're in the process of, they had their convention this last weekend in Houston. They're in the process
they booed
of
him, I think.
Drafting their platform. I want them to include a clause where the citizens of Texas can petition to have a recall vote on any senator, because 6 years is too long for these people to come down, play cowboy for 6 months during a primary and win an election, and then 6 years of playing rhino. That's absolutely insane. And I've been real unhappy with the stuff that Cruz has done in the past, and certainly everything that was done by previous generations of Texas senators. We need the ability to recall those people. And even if we never do it, at least the thought that we could, or the thought that we're organized to do it, will bring them to their senses. Because otherwise, they're going to be really evil people. So are we reaching the end of our hour?
We are, and I just wanted to say something about that. You know, when people ask me about these kinds of things and conspiracies, I'm like, well, look, my feeling about all of this is it just comes down to human nature. I expect the worst out of out of politicians and people who are in major power, because there is a certain type of emotional quotient or lack of, or personality traits that attracts those types of people to those types of positions, and in some cases makes them good at doing that. So when people talk about the ideas of conspiracies, I'm just like, it's just human nature. People plot. Some people are not good people, and some people will do things that you cannot imagine because you are a good person. And the more power that people acquire, the more wealth or the more stature that they acquire over time, makes them less and less in touch with the general qualities that you and I share and find decent. So it never surprises me when these kind of people do despicable things, and that conspiracy type, I'm not even gonna say theories, but conspiracy type situations occur. It's just humans do bad things sometimes.
Expect the worst and you'll never be disappointed.
And I don't say that. I mean, ultimately, I'm an optimist at the end of the day for the human spirit, but there are bad apples among us who do bad things. Joseph, I want to give you the final word. Yeah, we got about 2 minutes here. Tell everybody how they find your work, how they listen to you here on TNT. Plug anything you want, and your social media if you're on it.
No, I completely avoid social media.
As you should.
Yeah, as I should. If you go to BitChute, you can put in the search Joe, J-O-E-O-L-S-O-N, and it will bring up the 220 interviews that I've had, most of those with Jenks Fesser, where we're doing current events. And then if you go to Canada Free Press, you can go Joseph A. Olson, P-E, and there's the 61 articles that I have there. And then I've got another 60 articles at Principia Scientific, and there again, it's just Joseph Olson at Principia. So, you know, the articles are accessible. If you search my name, Joseph A. Olson, P.E., and Coast to Coast, you can see the five events that I did with Coast to Coast. All of them are great programs. And so if you're a Coast member, you can listen to those programs. If not, you can at least review the written material, and I have links to different articles. So that's where we are right now. I used to have a great website. It was number one in the Google search engine out of 160 million searches. But I got hacked offline, and I don't have a webmaster that can get me restored. So that's where I am on that particular event at this point. It's been great talking to you. And this weekend, we're going to have another discussion on climate with another opinion. And it'll be John Sullivan and Joe Postman. So See you guys then. Thanks.
All right. Sky Dragon Slaying, ladies and gentlemen, here on TNT. Thank you to Joseph Olson for coming on. I really enjoyed this, and we will have him back because we have a lot of things to talk about. And I got to be honest, this is the kind of content I like doing. I mean, I want to push the edges of what people think is possible. And I want to, you know, some of this is depressing, but you need to know about it and you need to at least consider it. You need to have additional information. Listen, the major media makes no bones about the fact they want you to believe their version of events. And oftentimes they get it wrong. And by the time they retract, it no longer matters because it's no longer on the front page. So this is the alternative to that. This is TNT Radio. My name is Michael Parker. Thank you, Joseph Olson. Thank you, Hervoye Morich. Thank you, CC Woods. Thank you, Alex Bolton in Australia. Ciao, people. I will see you mañana. That means tomorrow or at another time. I'm out.